Blog Talk Radio.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th, 1776, and the Declaration of Independence is my birth certificate. The bloodlines of the world run in my veins because I offered freedom to the oppressed. I am many things and many people. I am the nation. I am 200 million living souls and the ghost of millions who have lived and died for me. I am Nathan Hale and Paul Revere. I stood at Lexington and fired the shot heard round the world. I'm Washington, Jefferson, Patrick Henry. I'm John Paul Jones, the Green Mountain Boys, and Davy Crockett. I'm Lee and Abe Lincoln. I remember the Alamo, the Maine, and Pearl Harbor. When freedom called, I answered and stayed until it was over there. I left my heroic dead in Flanders fields and in the steaming jungles of Vietnam. I am the Brooklyn Bridge, the wheatlands of Kansas, and the granite hills of Vermont. I am the coal fields of the Virginias and Pennsylvania, the fertile lands of the West, the Golden Gate and Grand Canyon. I sprawl from the Atlantic to the Pacific. 3 million square miles. I'm more than 3 million farms. I'm forest, field, mountain, and desert. I'm quiet villages, and I'm cities that never sleep. You can look at me and see Ben Franklin walking down the streets of Philadelphia. I'm Babe Ruth in the World Series. I'm 130,000 schools and colleges and 326,000 churches where my people worship God as they please. I'm a ballot dropped in a box. I am an editorial in a newspaper, and I'm a letter to a congressman. I'm Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein. I'm Horace Greeley, Will Rogers, and the Wright brothers. I'm George Washington Carver, Daniel Webster, and Jonas Salk. I'm Walt Whitman, Thomas Paine, Tom Sawyer, and Walt Disney. Yes, I am the nation, and these are the things that I am. I was conceived in freedom, and God willing, in freedom I'll spend the rest of my days. May I possess always the integrity, the courage, and the strength to keep myself unshackled, to remain a citadel of freedom and a beacon of hope to the entire world. I am the nation.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Patriot Education. My name is Terry Rowland. I'm your hostess this evening. And as always, we are brought to you through the good offices of PatriotFamilies.com, a great group of people who believe that we make up this nation. We are this nation, and our voices, our thoughts, our opinions, our concerns matter. Well, I'm saying a happy Valentine's Day to everybody one day ahead of time from lovely snow-covered Virginia under global warming, about the only man-made global warming I can think of that could possibly have brought us two snowstorms and freezing rain and the thunderstorm within 24 hours is all the hot air coming out of Washington, D.C. I won't specify the specific source, but you can probably guess to whom I'm referring. Anyway, in spite of snow and hail and freezing rain and sleet and wet streets and damp everything, we're here tonight to discuss the topic, monkey cage or classroom. I work in a middle school, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you who may have just joined us, either in our listening audience out there in the Ethernet or here in the chat room. And my function in that school is to be the in-school suspension coordinator. A fancy name for the schoolhouse jailer, in effect. The students who can't behave appropriately in class, who get referred to the principal and vice principal for disciplinary action, quite often wind up spending the day with me in a very small classroom that accommodates comfortably about 7 students total. And during that time, they work on the classwork or assignments from their teachers, plus additional work in any of the 4 core academic areas that I assign them should they finish assigned work from their teachers. I have strict rules of behavior in my classroom. My students are not allowed to talk unless they have raised their hand and been called upon to speak. They are permitted restroom breaks, 2 in the morning and 2 after lunch. They must complete their work. They are expected to remain in their seat. And any inappropriate behavior of any kind will get them sent to the office. A phone call will be made to their parents, and they may either be sent home with a day of out-of-school suspension as a result, or given a second chance to show that they do understand that rules apply to them. This, ladies and gentlemen, is horrible, horrendous punishment for our delicate little buds of youthful immaturity. I'm sure that will surprise some of the people in our audience who actually are over the age of 25, because those were the rules in every classroom when I was going to school. Now they're considered to be disciplinary action. Our classrooms have devolved from an academic learning environment to feeding time at the zoo. Because, out of the goodness of our hearts, we have bent over backwards to accommodate those with behavioral disabilities, and we have bought into the freedom of speech means I get to say anything I want, anytime I want, to anyone I want, with no consequences whatsoever, rhetoric of the left. But, of course, this freedom of speech only applies if you are pronouncing something that the left deems appropriate. Our academic learning environment is just about as peaceful as feeding time in the monkey cage. Unfortunately, too many parents out there are handing over the social training of their children to the public schools. When I was growing up, my parents taught me what was socially acceptable behavior. They taught me to say please, thank you, you're welcome, excuse me, when asking permission to say may I do thus and so, to respond courteously when spoken to listen and wait until a person finished speaking before expressing their side of the conversation, and to show respect to one's elders. Because, if nothing else, those elders had managed to stay alive considerably longer than the child had, which in itself is an accomplishment. And having lived longer, they probably have gained some insights and some information that the child has not yet obtained. But a classroom that requires that kind of behavior is now considered to be punishment, ladies and gentlemen. About 20 years ago, there was a movement toward making education and making learning fun. In other words, it was interpreted as meaning if you were not enjoying yourself as much in class as you would at the local amusement park, somebody in your school, either the principal, the teacher, the school board, or the superintendent, was doing it wrong. I enjoyed school, ladies and gentlemen. I thought learning was fun. But it was the learning itself that was the fun part, not games, not screaming at the top of my lungs in the hallways while I changed class, not throwing things at other students, not texting people playing with my cell phone. Of course, we didn't have them in those days. We had paper and pencil and spitwads. But you didn't do that sort of thing in class. If you did, you were sent to the principal's office. Your parents were told about your infraction, and when you got home, the bucolic byproduct hit the fan. We used to get conduct or behavior grades on our report cards as well. And God help us if we brought home a bad grade in conduct or behavior. My friend Linda says when she went to kindergarten, she was so disappointed. All they ever did was play, finger paint, and take naps, and she could have done that at home. You know, Linda, I felt the same way. And I never could manage to fall asleep, so I felt guilty as all get out. Because I was supposed to be sleeping. And have you ever tried to sleep on a blanket on a hard linoleum floor? I don't recommend it, even if you're 5 years old. I remember I got put behind the piano in Catholic kindergarten because I was talking too much. That was a standard punishment. nowadays, I don't think there's any punishment for talking too much in kindergarten, and it's amazing to me that anybody ever learns anything in there, let alone in 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th grades, because nobody can shut up long enough to listen to what the teacher says. And you may think, ladies and gentlemen, that I'm exaggerating this, but I would strongly urge you, every single one of you has children in the public schools, to find a way to volunteer in the classroom, either be available to substitute teach, work as a teacher's aide or a paraprofessional for a period, or you can do that if you're on the sub roles, particularly if you have children who are not at home with you. The same thing for folks whose children are grown and outside the nest and who may be verging on grandparenthood. You need to see for yourselves, ladies and gentlemen, exactly what the situation is. Unfortunately, there have been so many pundits out there vilifying teachers and teachers' unions as if the two things were identical. They're not. For those of you who do not live in a right-to-work state, I'm fortunate enough, thank God, to live in one. Union membership in a non-right-to-work state is mandatory for many different professions, including the teaching profession. Your union dues are subtracted from your paycheck, and you are automatically a member of whatever teacher's union that particular state nurses in its bosom, like the proverbial viper. The union movement historically was desperately needed when it began, because workers were being exploited by rapacious capitalists who viewed people as nothing more than human resources, sound familiar, that could be used and thrown away the minute they were no longer in perfect condition. Long hours, unsafe working conditions, the hiring of children of 5 and 6 years old to work in dangerous businesses and industries because they could be hired more cheaply than a full-grown man. The changeover from a paternalistic, land-based aristocracy to a materialistic, business-based, wealthy plutocracy meant that the average Western peasant, if you will, who had managed to escape feudalism, at least to a degree, wound up in an even worse feudal situation, working for people whose only interest was to wring them dry of their energy and their labor so that they could enrich themselves. In the 1870s, 1880s, 1890s, the unions were heroes because they were doing what today's union leaders say they do and don't follow through on. In those days, in that past, the unions were trying to make life better for the average working man, so that he or she mostly, had enough to raise his children, to give them the opportunity to attend school, and to make a better life for themselves than their parents had had. But unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Unions have grown to their power and beyond it, across the board, and particularly unions that are teachers' unions, because their interest has changed from being representing an underpaid, extraordinarily important group of people to political maneuvering and filling the pockets of the union leaders and guaranteeing extraordinarily generous retirement benefits for 20 years' work within an institution that is been undermined by progressive liberal nonsense for the past 20 years. The unions do not want our schools improved, ladies and gentlemen. They can't have our schools improved. They fight against any school improvement because if they improve the schools, then the teachers will no longer need union representation to field their complaints and wield a large stick in state legislatures to get beneficial retirement and beneficial everything slated toward teachers. Yes, teaching is an important, absolutely essential profession. Yes, teachers deserve all kinds of accolades and all kinds of remuneration because what they do is not easy, in spite of the rhetoric that's unfortunately coming from the right. We do not sit behind a desk and sleep and read a newspaper all day. We would be eaten alive if we tried. If you have not been in a classroom full of 13-year-olds in the last 5 years, you have no idea what it's like to try to put knowledge somewhere vaguely related to these children's brains. Our children have been given over to the state to train and educate. And what the state has trained and educated them into is selfish, self-involved, noisy, inattentive, rude, and stupid proto-adults. They are much more interested in the sound of their own voices than they are in learning anything that the teachers have to teach. And this is not the fault of the children, ladies and gentlemen, because children are just that. They have no experience of an adult world in which you pay the responsibility for your actions. They have been trained away from understanding that their actions do carry with them the responsibility for consequences, because they have been told you have a quote-unquote disability and therefore you can't help it, so we'll just arrange for you to do what you want no matter what it does to everybody else in the classroom. And that attitude doesn't make the average student without a disability perform better. It makes the average student without a disability think, well, Susie Q gets by with it, so why should I abide by the rules? And therein lies the monkey cage that we walk into every morning at 7:30 or 8 o'clock, primed to exchange our knowledge for our students' attention and get slapped in the face with noise, disruption, IEPs, 40 miles of paperwork, 16 meetings in the minimal planning time we have, and then go home to hear our profession and ourselves vilified for not making every child Albert Einstein, Leonardo da Vinci, Mother Teresa, or, God forbid, Barack Obama. Children, by their very nature, ladies and gentlemen, do not come with manners, courtesy, and a moral conscience when they emerge from the womb. They have to be taught these things. Like any other mammal, untaught, they will do what gives them pleasure or profit and avoid that which gives them pain or discomfort. We train puppies, ladies and gentlemen, better than we teach our children. I can get a dog to sit more easily than I can get a middle school student to close his mouth long enough to listen to the directions for an assignment. And I am not exaggerating. Our kids have not been taught how to listen. They have been taught that they don't have to, that all they have to do is fill in a blank on a prepared sheet of questions and cull the answers from a piece of reading material on the same sheet by hunting keywords and plopping down whatever word is next to the keyword and then wondering why, when they come to take the standards of learning test, they have no clue in what century Dwight D. Eisenhower lived. I lay the blame for the chaos in our classrooms not only on government interference and liberal progressive college professors who are training our teachers and the absurdity of progressive socialist wealth redistribution and special ed, there is no bad behavior, only communication we do not understand. I lay it sternly and strongly in the laps of parents as well. Your children may be preciously delightful and funny as all get out at home when they behave in this manner. But this is not attractive or conducive to learning when they behave that way in school. I had a student in ISS for 2 days this last week who was a perfect gentleman, listened, behaved himself, worked hard, had troubles because learning is difficult for him, particularly reading, but he tried, and I helped him. That same student, one-on-one, would behave the same way for any teacher if he were the only student he or she had. In a classroom, or even with one other student, this particular student cannot control himself. He is either making obscene gestures, laughing hysterically at nothing, throwing things, poking people, making faces. And yet, because everyone is allowed to, is entitled to a free, appropriate public education in our public schools, he is in regular classes. And of course, everybody else in class with him can't stand him. After the first week of school, he wasn't funny anymore. This child has a problem, yes. This child needs an alternative form of education, just like my grandson did when his behavior was inappropriate. It is not helping the child, ladies and gentlemen, to constantly tell him that his behavior is inappropriate and yet permit him to repeat it endlessly with no real consequences or no change in his learning environment that would allow him to mature enough or get the training or help he needs to learn a degree of self-control. Self-control is hard for everyone to master, ladies and gentlemen. Very few people master it at the age of 13. But at the age of 13, they are beginning to learn how. It's a difficult age. They're neither fish nor fowl nor good red herring. Pubescent children are a mass of hormonal mulligatawny stew. They are bombarded with physical, emotional, and mental changes throughout the years of puberty. They cannot function independently of adult supervision, but they are firmly convinced that they can. They are trying their wings. They are attempting to be them and not just mommy's little girl or daddy's big boy, but them. And they don't have any more clue how to do it than the stone walls of the nearest cemetery do. But they are not abnormal. All kids at this age are going through the same thing. This is one of the reasons why pubescent children need a structured, firm environment. Because the old saying about give him an inch and he'll take a mile applies asymptotically to them. Without firm, clear rules, without adult authority, these kids are going to not be able to manage becoming adults, if ever, until they're 35. And even then, they're unlikely to be actual functioning adults. Because the progressive mindset is that of a 13-year-old child. And it is that progressive mindset that is guiding the disciplinary measures taken in our schools. I am not an advocate, ladies and gentlemen, of returning to the Victorian idea of children should be seen and not heard, or create a school environment like that of Lowood School in the novel Jane Eyre. No, I don't want to turn the clock back. I am not a reactionary. What I am is a functioning adult. I've been one for quite a few years now. I've worked with this age group for approximately 40 years. The kids I work with are no different from the kids I worked with 35, 40 years ago, in the sense that they have the same problems, they're going through the same physical changes, they have the same self-development issues. What's different is the environment in which they are being raised, both at home and at school. My friend Yo says, congratulations, she's still trying to become an adult. So am I, Yo. I've just had longer to work at it than you do, than you've had. I'm a little closer. So, legally, I'm an adult. Supposedly, I'm old enough to make my own decisions and suffer the consequences or rewards thereof. I would like to see some of our legislators go incognito and undercover without barrages of cameras and newsmen applauding how kind they're being to the little kiddies into a public school classroom in any city in this nation, in any town in this nation, and see exactly what their policies are creating. And then come back and tell us how incredibly wise they are about federal influence in public school. I'd like them to see the results of their progressive policies. I doubt very much whether any of them would dare to do it. I don't think if I were untrained or unfamiliar, I'd be willing to walk into a classroom full of 13-year-olds either. I'm used to it. It's kind of like, you know, the combat-weary veteran who's nursing the shave tail through his first combat mission. And it is a form of combat. Nobody wants to create an adversarial environment in a classroom, ladies and gentlemen. Nobody learns under those conditions. But learning can't take place if the person who has the knowledge that is supposed to be given to the student has to spend 45 minutes out of every classroom hour trying to get the class quiet enough to actually listen to what they have to say. Now, I have had some wonderful experiences covering classes as a sub. I had a couple of them 2 weeks ago. One of them when I substituted in a history class that was going over the 1920s, the Harlem Renaissance, the Great Migration, the music and art that changed the definition of what was American arts. I had classrooms full of kids who sat there and listened and who raised their hands and asked intelligent questions and who had paid attention when I did a question and answer period after I was through talking. It was a joy. Days like that keep me going, ladies and gentlemen. They truly do. I know that they keep any teacher going. Those are the days that we focus on, because if we didn't, we would run like rabbits from the greyhound from the classrooms of our public schools today. And many teachers do. There's a very large percentage, and I can't remember the exact figure. It's more than half, I believe, of education majors who go to work in the public school and do not last in the profession as long as 5 years. They simply can't stand it. Their hands are tied and they're gagged at every turn. They have to accommodate to any potential idiosyncrasy of a child, so long as it's gotten labeled as a quote-unquote disability. They can't enforce discipline in their classroom, because then they're being abusive. And I'm not talking about, you know, taking out a ruler and smacking somebody on the hand, which the nuns in the Catholic school I attended did to students who were obstreperous on a regular basis. Not to me. I was a well-behaved kid, and I don't like pain, so I was doubly well-behaved. I'm not in favor of corporal punishment in schools, particularly past about sixth grade, because it's ineffective. And administering corporal punishment has to be very carefully controlled. You cannot administer it if you, the administrator of the punishment, are angry, because it's way too easy to not recognize your own strength. Principals, vice principals, etc., in the old days, who administered corporal punishment with the Board of Education, were generally not sadists. They were not child abusers. Most of them avoided having to go to those lengths as long as they possibly could. But when a student's behavior became such that it endangered that student or other students around them, that ultimate punishment was used judiciously in 99% of the time. I am, as I said, not in favor of corporal punishment in schools. Corporal punishment generally is not effective after a child reaches puberty, because the puppy stage is over with. Corporal punishment on a dog that's a year old is fairly ineffective. It only works in puppyhood. And the puppyhood memory becomes implanted in the dog so that they know that pooping entails unpleasant aftermaths. So they don't do it anymore. And yes, I'm sure there are lots of people out there who are saying, oh my God, this is a crazy old lady. She thinks my child is a dog. My friend Linda says, and it never works on cats. She's right, it doesn't. I have five of them. I think probably I managed to live with five cats because I managed to teach middle school age kids. Both jobs are like herding cats, which is a fruitless endeavor, but we try anyway. There is so much that our children need to learn, ladies and gentlemen. We have such a rapidly evolving technological world. We are learning more and doing more with technology and science and medicine than we have ever done in our long history as a species. We discover new things and new ways to do things and new understandings of our universe and how the various parts of it interact on almost a daily basis. Our kids are entering a world where everything changes within a week. It has, over and over and over again. They need to have a good foundation of skills, not only communication skills and an understanding of mathematical and scientific principles and a basic understanding of elapsed time and history, but understanding how to learn. Because being a lifelong learner is no longer just an admirable goal, it is a dire necessity. You cannot succeed in this world anymore, ladies and gentlemen, by doing the same rote job over and over and over again. The chance of 40 years and a gold watch of taking the left wings off chickens is long gone. And it will not return in our lifetime or in our children's. We can be nostalgic and wish for the days of the past, like some of the environmentalists who would like to have us all be happy hunter-gatherers, rigidly limiting our populations in the method the Spartans used, in that if you had an extra kid, you exposed it to the elements and let the wolves eat it so that there'd be plenty of food for everybody, which is basically the way the environmentalist utopia would have to be maintained. Of course, they don't wish to actually admit that. But anyway, we are not going to have those happy villages gathering in the sheaves and celebrating harvest festival in their peasant blouses and brewing their mead and happily getting drunk and lying down flat in the village square anymore. It doesn't happen. We have created a world in which we can be, in effect, totally independent of physical contact with any other human being. Via internet, cell phones, electronic media, GPS satellites, communication, etc. You can earn a living, interact socially, learn things. About the only thing you can't do on the internet is physical sexual intercourse, and I'm pretty sure somebody's going to come up with a way to do that pretty doggone soon. And believe me, I am not looking forward to that development. But, kidding aside, our kids are entering a world where everything they know today can be turned upside down tomorrow. They need the skills and the training in self-control and the confidence in real achievement that will allow them to find their feet in the upheavals and changes and world awakening discoveries that will be around the bend for them and for us. Part of what gives them the basis from which to be a lifelong learner is that wonderful thing, self-control. The ability to pull yourself together, hold the panic, and go ahead anyway in order to save your life or someone else's, or hold back your tears and your grief in order to be there for someone who needs you desperately, even if your heart is broken. We develop those abilities, ladies and gentlemen, in small increments over our entire lives. And they have to start at home. They have to begin with our parents, teaching us by precept and by example what it means to behave oneself acceptably in social encounters. I was having a conversation with a friend last night regarding the left-right divergence on the political, socio-economic spectrum. And I mentioned that the left has always operated on feelings. Every leftist political wannabe uses emotion to sell his or her political product. And the left-leaning seek out those who can be convinced that they are victims. Because when you feel victimized, you are angry and sad and your emotions are in charge. And you are thus much more malleable and much more trainable and much more receptive to emotional appeals. You are ready to be part of the mob and hang the guilty, you know what, who took from you whatever it is you think you were supposed to have and don't. The right side of the political spectrum generally includes or is made up of people who have become lifelong learners and are successful within the societal system into which they're born. Doesn't mean they can't innovate or think of new things to do. Quite often they are more innovative and creative than the emotionally motivated victims on the left side. When you're a victim, you're not being terribly creative either. You're just waiting for somebody else to fix it. People who are successful in their society generally wish that society to remain pretty much what it is, because it has been good to them, for whatever reason, usually because of their effort and whatever freedoms that society offered them to fulfill their personal goals, destinies, creative ideals, that kind of thing. Those who lean toward the left tend to be, to feel as if they are not successful in a society, that society doesn't support them, doesn't give them the kind of loving embrace that they feel they are entitled to, whether that loving embrace is expressed physically, monetarily, socially, career-wise, acknowledging one's sexual preferences. It could be almost anything. But for whatever reason, those who are attracted to the viewpoint from the left side of the aisle, so to speak, see themselves as somehow unappreciated or underappreciated by society. And their answer to this is to change society. They don't really care how, because whatever change is obviously going to make it better for them, because the way it is now, they don't like it. And that's a fairly simplified view, I agree. I'm not going into abstruse political or socioeconomic mathematical models or anything of that nature. I'm trying to use a very clear metaphorical image. I fall on the right side mainly because I am and always have been quite comfortable exercising my freedoms and accepting the consequences and rewards of my choices. When I have screwed up, I have not been able to blame anybody but me, because I didn't do it right. If I have been accused of screwing up, and it was not my error, but someone else's, I will speak out and say so. But I won't demand that we hang, draw, and quarter the individual who was petty-minded and small enough to try to blame me for their incompetence. That's absurd. Won't do any good. I have lived my life believing that as a free human being, I had the right to choose my own path. And if I stumbled and fell on that path, it was very likely because I wasn't looking where I was going very carefully. It wasn't automatically somebody pushed me, somebody put a rock in front of me, somebody changed the path when I wasn't looking, somebody moved the signpost. I've always figured that I made a misstep. Now, sometimes we can make a literal misstep because something that we assume is solid ground all of a sudden isn't, for whatever reason. And it isn't solid ground because someone else has neglected to put up a brace under it. And under those conditions, yes, I can blame that person for not fulfilling his responsibilities. And yes, I'm just as likely to use litigation to try to recover from whatever damage I suffered. But I am not suit happy. Unlike many parents who, every time their child is disciplined in school, the first thing they do is say, well, I'll bring my lawyer with me to the conference. I'm sorry. How many of you who are over the age of 35 ever remember your parents saying to the principal when they were called for a conference, if they had one, that they were planning on bringing their legal advisor with them? It's somebody else's fault my child behaved this way, and I'm going to bring my lawyer so my lawyer can represent me when I sue you for disciplining my child because he couldn't help it. And don't think I'm exaggerating. My friend Yo says never. I'll bet you that there isn't anybody in the chat room right now who remembers their parents bringing a lawyer to a parent-teacher conference at school. If there is, okay, Bill, Yo, Rod, Doc, Linda, anybody out there in the chat room, do you ever remember your parents telling the principal, if they were called to the school to discuss your behavior, that they were bringing a lawyer along? Or having them on speed dial while they were in the conference and telling the principal so? I certainly don't. But I have heard of several instances in my own school where this is the case. Doesn't this tell you that I may be seeing a glimmer of truth, ladies and gentlemen, when I say that we need to look at the parental training as well as the teacher disciplinary methods and school board decisions and governmental interference? It's just as dishonest to blame government interference in schools for your child's bad behavior when you haven't done anything to correct it at home, as it is to blame everybody else in the world because you didn't learn anything in school and hence can't hold a job for longer than 10 minutes. The way we have to be careful in school, meaning educators, and it's not just teachers, it's paraprofessionals like me, janitors, principals, school secretaries, custodial staff, cafeteria workers, it doesn't make any difference. If you are interacting with those kids, even if it's only to sweep up after them in the hallways, you have to be extraordinarily careful about what you say and what you do. Because school boards and administrators are being terrorized by litigious parents. All it takes is one lawsuit, and the entire school system is going to have a black eye that won't fade for years. Because too many parents have bought into the, it's not your fault, you can't help it, mentality. And they are teaching their children to follow it. And they have extrapolated this victim mentality to include, you are not required to exhibit courteous and mannerly behavior because that is demanding of you that you give up your freedom to be an obnoxious brat. I don't remember reading anything in the Constitution that guarantees you the right to tell your child and your child the right to be an obnoxious brat. You have the right to be an obnoxious adult. Culture. But as an adult, hopefully you will have learned that if you're obnoxious, people probably aren't going to want to be around you or to listen to you for very long. Unless you find a whole group of obnoxious people, all of whom agree with you, and they aren't obnoxious to you, just to everybody else. And then you'll be perfectly happy, and you have the right to search for such a group, and I'm pretty sure that there are lots of liberals out there who've found one. Lots of them. My friend Bill had an incident where his daughter was hauled up for defending herself against a group of bullies who were trying to injure her. And he basically said to the school that his daughter was going to defend herself. Didn't bring a lawyer with him. He was a parent, a dad. He went to school and said, I'm sorry. No, my daughter is not going to be anybody's punching bag. And I'm pretty sure that a repeat of the situation didn't occur. My dad would have done the same thing for me. As a matter of fact, he did for my sister. Because she cold-cocked this bullying girl in the girl's bathroom. Because she'd put up with the shoves and pushes and trips for about 6 weeks. And when three or four or five of them ganged up on her in the bathroom, she just hauled off and socked one of them in the face. And my dad went to school and said, oh, yeah, uh-huh, I'm on her side. If they gang up on her again, I've told her to hit them twice. Nothing more was said, and she wasn't bothered anymore, either. There is no more common sense, ladies and gentlemen, in the disciplining of our children at home and at school. If we discipline them at home, all it takes is one hungry for reputation social worker to decide this is going to make my career. You are abusing your poor innocent child. Even if you spanked him because he was trying to gouge out your kitten's eyes, you have abused that poor innocent thing who didn't realize it was wrong, and you need to have him taken away from you, and you need to attend anger management and parenting classes, and we'll find him a foster family to live with, who won't beat him when he just explores his world and other beings. And don't believe that that can't happen, because it does. We have a wonderful country, ladies and gentlemen. We are incredibly blessed in comparison to every single society that has ever existed on this planet since societies first began millions of years ago, or thousands of years ago, or last year, depending on your particular persuasion and beliefs. We are wealthier, more comfortable, healthier, wiser, more pampered than any human beings who have ever existed on this earth. And still, we expect more. We want to have everybody bow down and worship our own self-image. At least, that is what we are teaching our children. The number of kids that I run into who do not know the difference between fact and opinion, and if they do, believe that their opinion is fact and cannot be disagreed with, would astound you. Our nation's history, as my friend Linda remarks in the chat room, shows us what we can do and have done, both good and bad. We have given the world more than any other society since Rome. I mean that. I believe that is true. And we have given the world more in both good and bad. In the sense that any invention, ladies and gentlemen, has its yin side and its yang side. I don't care what new invention you make, somebody will figure out a way to hurt somebody else with it. Because it is the nature of man to be aggressive and to fight for his own survival. Doc just gave me some information. Those of you listening out there in the Ethernet, you know our friend Mr. Magic, who had his show here. He was in a rather bad car accident a while ago, and we've all been very worried about him. But Doc tells me that he was online the other night and that he's sounding a little weak, but he's recovering, and hopefully he'll be back with us on all of our shows, and we look forward to it. God bless you, Michael. We're all thinking about you. Again, ladies and gentlemen, we have got to stop expecting anybody to make the world perfect for us. For one thing, nobody can make it perfect even for themselves. And nobody certainly can make the world perfect for anyone else. Even for those we love. And we try. We try to protect and shelter and love and comfort our children. We try to keep them safe. We try to give them every opportunity and every good we can possibly manage because we love them. But when we love them, we also know that there will come a time when they have to stand on their own. By the very nature of the human life cycle, we cannot be there to parent them, care for them, protect them, comfort them, and keep them safe forever. Because in the nature of the life cycle, we will predecease them. And they will be alone. And they will then have to face their own mortality and the fact that they cannot be there for their own children forever. It is the nature of humans. We are temporal creatures. We cannot keep our children infants forever because we will not be around to comfort them and put the pacifier in their mouth and tuck the baby blanket around them and change their diapers and burp them when their tummies ache. And government won't either, no matter what it promises. Living is a risk, ladies and gentlemen, and we all share it. And what makes societies cohere is recognizing that and encouraging the members of a society to treat one another's individuality with the respect and honor such a God-given gift deserves. That's why we teach our children courtesy and respect and good manners. Because that is a reflection of their own self-respect. Everybody swears up and down that they believe in the golden rule. Do unto others as you would be done by. Treat other folks the way you want to be treated. You get back what you give out. These phrasings of this principle are found in every spiritual path and every religious belief system that human beings have followed. And as much as we talk about it, very few of us really, really try to live it. And that kind of respect isn't wrap everybody in cotton wool and keep them in their niche safe and warm until you pull them out to be eaten by the elite, which is pretty much the progressive view, metaphorically speaking about the eating. There always is Soylent Green, of course. The kind of respect that underlies the golden rule is not only respecting other people and treating them courteously and helping them when they're in trouble and when they need you, but it's also allowing them to walk alone if they so desire or if they need to. because I doubt whether very many parents out there would want to go back to being six and nap time finger painting and playing with blocks. It was fun when we did it at that age, but it's not quite so enticing at the age of 40. I don't know, maybe by the time I get to be 85, I'll look forward to napping and finger painting and playing with blocks. It's quite possible. But I'm certainly not ready now. Yes, there are some things I need help with. So I ask people who have expertise in that area to help me. And 9 times out of 10, if they're friends, and mostly they are, they do help me. And they in turn ask me for help in areas where they don't have expertise. And I willingly and gladly help them. And it works. What goes around comes around. Pay it forward. All of these ideas are good ones. But if we don't teach our children how to do that, how to have respect for themselves that allows them to show respect for others, we're creating monsters, ladies and gentlemen. Because the underlying problem of the disrespect and the noise and the bravado and the sheer rude pig-like behavior of so many kids of all ages is their underlying assumption that I've got to prove that I'm meaner than everybody else around here and force people to do my way, because if I don't, I'm going to be a victim. They're going to do it to me. It's the other side of the coin of the golden rule. It's the do unto others before they do it to you. And that philosophy, that belief, has permeated the classrooms of our public schools. And we are seeing the result. And we will continue to see the result as our preeminence in global economic innovation, business, invention declines. Because self-respect isn't just saying yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, please, and thank you. Self-respect is believing in yourself enough that you will take the risk of being laughed at or hooted at or insulted and do what is right instead of what is easy. My husband used to say and lived by the mantra that a true gentleman never accidentally offends anyone. It's a good philosophy because it means that you are aware of the effect of your words and deeds on those around you. This is one of the hardest things for someone on the autism spectrum, for example, to grasp and integrate into their interactions socially. Unless you plan to live in a cabin in the woods, away from the entire universe, and never talk to anybody, sooner or later you're going to have to interact with another human being. And when you do, I would assume that if you're like most of us, you'd like it to be a positive interaction. But if nobody ever tells you how to do this positively, you're going to have a hard time trying to achieve anything that involves another person. Have a caller. I think it's my friend Linda from California. Hello there.
Hi, how are you? Yes, it is.
I thought I recognized that area code.
we have an incredible Indian summer again. I mean, we don't think we were ever had winter this year.
Well, I've got snow and roughly 37 degrees, and I don't know whether there's going to be school tomorrow or not. There wasn't any today.
However,
because yeah. Mm-hmm.
I wish that you and the people in Georgia and all those other places could just ship some of it over here, because we are in a mess.
I know.
They're talking about rationing water and stuff, and the idiot-in-chief is flying to Fresno today so he can speak with Mussolini Brown about this drought. Oh, my God.
Oh, God. I think I would go as far away from Fresno as possible to escape the nausea.
I know. I wish I could come back to you guys to get away from both of them. But anyway.
Well, Linda, there's always a place for you with me. Anytime. You know that.
I know. So what you were speaking of with behaviors, especially the children, you know, and there are no manners taught. I mean, you just go even decade by decade or century by century. Now, mm-hmm. I don't want to go back to the time when there was huge corporal punishment and the poor children were seen and not heard. And
neither do I.
Treated like little slaves, and they were, and it was. I don't think that was right either. But, my God, can we not find a happy medium? And I don't think there was much wrong with maybe the 30s and 40s where children were, you know.
Disciplined.
A little bit more disciplined, and mm-hmm. they even, I think, probably prior to those times, they still had chaperones for the girls who were going on dates.
Yeah.
You know, I think at certain ages that's appropriate. Now, of course, mm-hmm. not so much once you're 21 or so, but, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many good things to be said about some of the portions. It's like if mm-hmm. we look back through the prism of today, why not just pick out the good stuff, for heaven's sake?
Because
and not repeat the bad.
As wonderfully innovative and forward-thinking and pioneering as this society is, it has the flaws of most pioneer societies, most innovators. It's mm-hmm. in love with new. And it carries
True.
New to absurd lengths. Look at the women's movement.
Yes.
That is a prime
know.
Example. In its beginnings, I believed in its cause, that everybody, mm-hmm. male or female, should have the option of choosing a career that gratified and fulfilled them so long as they were physically and mentally capable of doing it, which was supposed to be the whole thrust.
Right.
But it got pushed to the nth degree. Of I want an abortion every Tuesday morning because I want to sleep with 50 men on Monday night. And that's my right under women's liberation. It's this absurd, too much of a good thing passion that mm-hmm. we have as Americans. We've done it over and over and over again. If you look back through history, every mm-hmm. cotton picking time, something new comes up. We go gung-ho after it, like, you know, the kitty cat after the catnip mouse.
And that's right. And
then we find out
doing.
That... You know, it's not edible, you know.
Right. And now that's what they're doing with the singularity technology and this DNA genome projects. And I just read, I'm going to cover that on my show, but it's frightening, mm-hmm. Terry. Really, really frightening. So, I mean, these people are secular humanists, and there's no moral and ethics behind it.
Reading the new Superman so Goddard-Dameron becomes reality.
And, right.
I don't know.
Yeah. And not only that, which, of course, the ones who keep trying to rebuild Babylon, I mean, this would be their ultimate fantasy, to live forever and be gods. I mean, oh, Lord, I think I'm going to throw up again. But
well, the thing is,
also,
they don't think it's a fantasy, Linda. They think it's an achievable dream.
Oh, I know. Well,
and that's what's
so
scary.
I have a feeling, since the one has not abdicated his throne and is not going to, that he'll mm-hmm. have something to say about that someday, and then
mm-hmm.
they'll figure it out. But
mm-hmm.
unfortunately,
yeah.
it's not today. But when you talk also about, you know, just the attitudes of what's going on in the schools and mm-hmm. and the parents, et cetera, because we've had generation upon generation of these bad attitudes. There was
mm-hmm.
a story that Glenn talked about, and I don't know if it was connected with Mike Rowe or someone else in history, but about the work ethic. And
mm-hmm.
back in the Depression, there were people who were on those government programs, and they actually got paid not very much, but they could work.
Mm-hmm.
The men could work.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yes, WPA, for example.
Yeah, and they were so grateful for the opportunity. And there was this one gentleman who was not part of it, and he just jumped down in the ditch and started helping. And one of the foremen says, "Well, I don't know who you are, but you can't do this because I don't have any money to pay you."
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "I don't want to be paid. I just need to work."
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
I mean, this is what we've lost, Terry, and
we have.
This is sad. We, you know, hopefully it's coming back with people like Mike Rowe and Glenn Beck and even Rand
mm-hmm.
Paul today. I was very impressed with some of the things he was saying. You know, I'm not going to agree with everybody 100% on anything, and that's
of
normal.
Of course not.
But
no,
boy, this
likewise.
This guy's about 95% in my ballpark. You know, so
yeah.
You just got to pick it. You got to pick your battles.
the progressive left is very good at providing opiates. Marx, of course, called religion the opiate of the masses, which was nonsense. But the fact that he compared religion to an opiate tells you something about his way of looking at everybody who wasn't him. In other words, they were prime targets for being drugged by something or other into obedience and docility. And the progressive left's method is to opiate us with pleasure, comfort, leisure, don't have to do anything, somebody wants the eternal infancy.
Yes, and that's why there are people out there, and I know that there is more than one, but Glenn was talking about this. He says that's one of the reasons he's gotten that. I want to go after the culture, he says, because if we don't get that, we're done. You know, and I think he's right. I really think that that's part of his calling, and I think it's quite admirable, and I'm glad he's got a lot of people helping him.
They used to call it the Protestant work ethic when I was growing up. And they named it that because it was very much a part of the creed of the original settlers of the Massachusetts Bay Colony. The Puritan belief system implied that God put us here to work. That was their interpretation, biblical interpretation, of the purpose of man, that man was supposed to work. That was why he was created. And I use man, not in the sexist, gender,
unpolitically
correct. Human beings, the mankind, if you will. And it is psychologically quite viable, because if you do not work, in other words, put forth effort and receive a reward commensurate with your effort, you are not an adult. Children are cared for. Their wants are provided for by adult caregivers. When you give up your adulthood, your right to work, your right to put forth effort and be compensated for it, then you give up your adult status. You embrace remaining eternally a child.
Which also puts you in bondage. Because guess who's going to overlord over you? Absolutely.
When mommy and daddy aren't happy with you, you don't get the candy.
Pavlov's dogs. Not good.
Yes, ma'am.
Not good.
And I don't wag my tail very well. Hang on a minute. I've got a phone call coming in. Oh, okay. I know what it is. It's probably news on whether or not we have school, but they'll leave them the message. And I'm watching the television find out. You know, I hate to interrupt.
You're having a good time. I am definitely going to go back in the chat room and thank you for taking the call and let you wrap it up and all things. It's so good to hear your voice. You have a great show today. I'm hoping people catch it in the podcast.
Thank you so much, sweetie, for being here and for calling in.
Thanks. All right, hon. Take care. God bless.
Take care. Blessed be. Looks like I have another caller on the line here. Let's see who's out there. Hello there.
Hi, it's Martha.
Martha, wonderful. I'm so glad you joined us. How are you doing, dear?
I hear it's just Miss Linda.
Oh, yes. She was just on about 2 seconds ago. She just left the phone lines. I'm so glad you called in. How are things in your neck of the woods?
Oh, I'm sitting out on my swing singing, honey.
Oh, bless your heart. I'm sitting outside watching the snow.
It's about 78.
Oh, don't tell me that, Martha.
Beautiful blue sky.
You and Linda, I swear. What is this? This is let's beat up Ontario and throw her in the snow, right?
Well, I do it to YOLO, too.
Yeah, I know you do. Bless her heart, they're inundated up there. My sister-in-law in Cleveland is, you know, 2 foot of snow in front of her front door last week, and she couldn't get out of the house. And this crazy weather here in Virginia, we little wussy Southerners are not used to this stuff.
How much do you have?
Well, last night I had about 4 inches. This morning I had about 2 inches in various places. 3 hours ago I had none, and now it's snowing again. And then we had a thunderstorm this afternoon.
Oh, wow.
It is crazy. Global warming, right?
Oh, yes.
It is absolutely nuts.
You remember when the Russians got stuck in the Antarctic?
Oh, yes.
A few weeks ago?
Yes.
Do you know, mm-hmm. do you know one of them is quoted as saying that the ice wasn't supposed to be there? That's what I did.
Oh, my God. They listened to Al Gore and Russia.
Unbelievable.
Oh, I had more respect for the Russians than that, but oh, well. You live and you learn.
Well, it doesn't matter who you are as far as that goes. A scientist is a scientist is a scientist.
Exactly. And unfortunately,
you know, they're pretty much apolitical unless they're heavily paid for.
Yes, and they're the ones who are political generally aren't really scientists. They're just using science as a vehicle to power, like politicians use statesmanship as a vehicle to power. I guess I'm a little odd because the only power I've ever enjoyed is power over myself. And even sometimes I don't have that. I am skittish about taking responsibility for other people, which is one of the reasons I never procreated. It's enough to be responsible for raising cats and puppies. I really don't want to raise children, which is, you know, I don't know whether that makes me the liberals' mascot or their favorite demon. I really can't tell because they have such an odd view of kids. Either you're supposed to never have them and abort them the minute you think you're going to, or you have to treat them as if they are precious jewels wrapped in cotton wool and never say a harsh word to them and make them self-indulged, nasty little creatures so that they are feeling good about themselves.
And they are rotten.
Yeah,
rotten to the core.
And the thing is, it's such a of course, expecting logic from anybody on the far left is just about as logical as expecting me to walk up to a tomato seed and say grow and have a tomato in 2 seconds. I mean, you just don't get those things.
Well, it's
because
like the libs
they don't
say,
operate
you know,
on
quit,
logic.
It's like the libs say, quit killing the chickens and just go to the grocery and get your chickens.
I know. Oh, it is so funny. It really is. If they weren't so dangerous in what they're
dastardly.
Doing, they would be absolutely the butt of every late-night TV joke there is.
Well, they should be. They should be,
because
anyway.
Their whole dichotomous approach to the world is literally laughable. But unfortunately,
yes, it is.
They can't and won't see it.
Now,
and
here's one for you. I read about 2 days ago, and I didn't get a chance to post it. I got interrupted, but 95% of all the scientists that have been putting out figures for global warming have been proven wrong.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh. I've seen several real scientists who have said the same. And unfortunately, hubris is a job requirement for a liberal. You have to believe that puny little humans can completely destroy the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you have to. If you're a liberal, you have to believe in God or Dammerung and man rising to godhood because the gods are lame and stupid and they quarrel too much and, you know, they're just not people. So mankind is evolving toward divinity, and if you just let government have its way, we'll get there faster. And the absurdity of it just goes right over the head of the vast majority of people who are quite happy in their swaddling clothes waiting for the pacifier.
Yes.
I've never been real good at that. Even my mother said that I didn't take to the pacifier either.
Well,
oh,
I think
good.
I told
my
you.
My schools are closed tomorrow.
I think I told you how I came out to Arizona, didn't I? My daughter had puberty kicking in big time, and she was sneaking out big time. We were in Martinsburg,
mm-hmm.
West Virginia, top of the mm-hmm. Eastern Panhandle, top of the Shenandoah, mm-hmm. rather.
Yeah. I know Martinsburg.
She's sneaking out. My neighbors are telling me that, you know, she's wandering around at 2, 3, 4 in the morning. She's not doing anything with the group, but the others
mm-hmm.
are.
Uh-huh. And
smoking and all this stuff. And I was about to pull my hair out. So I sold my house and picked her up and moved her across country, broke that taproot.
Mm-hmm. And that's sometimes what you have to do. And if
I didn't know how else to get her attention. I was scared
to death
I was going to lose her to drugs or pregnancy or
exactly
jail.
Or just the cemetery. Because when we're proud like that, it's easy to be an unintended consequence of a drive-by shooting.
Yeah.
You know? But if you had done that last week, Martha, you would have been vilified as a horribly abusive, unkind, and cruel mother.
Well,
because
you know what I want to say.
Her friend.
Have you been online in the last hour on Facebook?
No, other than... here on Blog Talk. My computer is elderly like me, and it tends to get have a panic attack
grumpy.
If I have more than two
grumpy.
Tabs. it gets confused. Yeah, it has
testy.
Alzheimer's, computer
version. Well, getting back to that, you know, I'd love to tell them just go shove it.
Mm-hmm.
If they tried that number on me, and Joe won't. Joe and Mondo make these kids love each other. They have to kiss each other hello and goodbye. They have to tell each other they love them and show respect, and especially make sure that Isaac doesn't get hurt.
Yeah, a friend of mine.
The most vulnerable.
A friend of mine dropped by last night. He his wife has two sons, one of whom is autistic. And we were talking about the monkey cage aspect of public education and the fact that these kids who are on the autism spectrum or have a quote-unquote behavioral disability are accommodated under the Free Appropriate Public Education Americans with Disabilities Act as interpreted by schools to the point where their behaviors interfere with other children's abilities to actually have a classroom in which they can learn.
And
he was telling me that one time the son was mad at his mom, and he called her, "You bitch." And he was sitting at the dinner table. She walked around behind his chair, and she picked it up, and she slammed it on the floor. And he fell over backwards and was lying there with his mouth open, staring at her. And she looked at him and she said, "There are two people to whom you never, ever, ever use that word. One is your wife and the other is your mother." Never since has he uttered that word, and that was 4 years ago. So you can teach them. And no, he
will
not hurt anyway.
Anthony has turned seven and become a little monster, and I have discovered that the best way to get his attention is the good old Gibbs swat to the back to the head.
Yep. Uh-huh. Just call
no
him
harm.
Tony Nozo and keep going, right?
No harm.
Uh-huh.
But it sure does work.
It's like the old joke about the farmer who walked up to his mule and hit him in the head with a 2x4, and the city guy walking by says, "What'd you do that? That's cruel. It's abusive." And the farmer said, "I was just getting his attention first, you know." And unfortunately, obviously you're not going to hit your kid in the head with a 2x4. Obviously you're not going to beat them until they bleed. You're not going to burn them with cigarettes. If you're a caring parent, you do not want your child to be in pain. But if you are a caring parent, you understand that at certain ages in childhood, the pain receptors are more conducive to learning than talking is.
Yeah.
Consequences have to be immediate. And,
oh,
you know,
so true.
It is. And yet all
you have
the
to get their attention.
That's pretty much it. And hopefully you
and
won't get to the point where you've got to use a 2x4 to do it.
And this kid that got away with the affluenza.
Oh, my Lord. Oh, my God. That just makes me want to. That makes me almost as sick as hearing the current president open his mouth, you know, and I leave the room then because I don't want to spend hours vomiting. But that case, it is liberalism and the no bad behavior, only communication we don't understand mantra carried to the ultimate absurdity. I'm sorry. I cannot excuse driving drunk and killing people by saying, "Well, he just was raised with too much money." No,
I can't buy it either.
No.
I just have never been so insulted in my life.
Nor I. Why on earth? I swear, Martha, these left-leaning idiots in psychology and education and social engineering, they can't wait to find a new syndrome. Everything is a freaking syndrome. My mother had one toe missing, so that's why I'm a serial killer. It's the the maternal unidigit syndrome. And I'm sorry, somebody's going to come up with that as a reason why this particular serial killer should be given life imprisonment instead of removed from society permanently by death. I'm sorry if I offend people. I am deliberately offending them. I take back the apology. I am deliberately offending those who wish to keep people in society who are a danger to me and every other normal human being who makes society up. I would love to offend you and shoot the individual immediately.
I agree.
And it's, you know, like David always said, you know, a gentleman or a lady doesn't accidentally offend anybody. If I'm going to offend you, I'm going to do it deliberately.
Yes.
And unfortunately, we have lost not only our common sense, we've also lost our sense of humor. Because we can't.
Oh, nobody has any humor anymore. Well,
no.
Idiots.
The people on the left don't. Because
no, they don't.
Humor equalizes people in real equality. They don't believe in real equality. They believe in the equality of the slave to the slave and the superiority of the intellectual elite. Humor brings everybody down to the same human level. They can't have that. They can't have a sense of humor because that makes them like us, the poor, stupid ones that they have to protect from ourselves. And, you know, laughter is one of the best weapons there is.
So important.
It is. You need it to boost your immune system. You need it for your mental and emotional health. And you need it because every single one of us, sooner or later, is going to have to eat some humble pie without the whipped cream on it.
Yes, and that's what we're teaching the kids.
Yep, we're teaching them they never have to have any pie like that. All they get is the whipped cream.
They need
a dose of the Three Stooges is what they need. I'm not a fan of plastic humor, but believe me, I would love to have a Three Stooges marathon in ISS sometime and say, this is what's going to happen to you if you keep opening your mouth without raising your hand. But because I am a kind, generous, sweet little old lady, I won't do it. And because I don't want to get caught. Well, everybody out there listening, if they've heard this show before, they know that Terry Rowland's a little bit strange, but it's okay. I'm really not dangerous, at least.
Oh, we love you.
Don't deserve it. Thank you, dear. I appreciate it. Well, we've only got about 2 minutes left, dear, so
I'm sorry. The family just left, so I thought I'd give it a try.
Well, I'm so glad you got here in time for at least the last part of the show. And
yes.
Join us a little earlier so we can laugh together next week.
I'll
be back.
It all depends on whether I'm alone or not.
I understand. Well, I'm always alone most of the time, other than my feline friends, and they don't object to my political ranting. They just go to sleep on whatever is soft and cozy and handy. So they're a great audience because they never boo, unless they're hungry, and then they get a little bit obstreperous. But I feed them before the show. So, you know.
Well, that helps.
It does. As I said before, I don't mind raising cats. I like, understand, and equate with cats. And I like, understand, and equate with dogs. Children are other people's business to raise. I am happy to teach them, but I know how to change diapers. I know how to take care of them. My youngest sister was born when I was 15, and I did my share, which is probably why I grew up not wanting children.
Probably.
Yeah. I think more young ladies should have sisters born at that age. So, ladies and gentlemen, Martha on the phone, all the folks in the chat room, thank you so much for joining us tonight. And I hope that you'll be back next week, Thursday, at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Patriot Education. And join us for our other shows, Constitution Hour, Right from the Left Coast. Go to our website, www.patriotfamilies.com, and you'll find links to all the radio shows we do here on Blog Talk. Great people to interact with and share your ideas with, argue with, agree with, whatever gives you pleasure. So long as it doesn't pick my pocket or break my arm, you can say it or do it with this Patriot family. And I hope every single one of you has a wonderful Valentine's Day. And may you all be blessed. And join the Hoot and Holler Boys, too. We've got some great folks here on Blog Talk, and they are looking to have you join in. Call us, visit us in the chat room, come to the website. Stand tall, ladies and gentlemen. You live in the greatest country in the history of mankind, and it's your job not only to love it, but to defend it and protect it from those who would reduce its greatness. May God bless you all, and as always, all my love to my greatest fan.
Good night, Terry.
Night, Martha. Thanks for calling, honey.
Good to hear you.
Thank you, ma'am. It's always
night.
A pleasure. Night.